Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on the sportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And Ray Woodson is our regular guest, too.
A lot of ifs, but after a disastrous 2017, the Giants were not going to rebuild. They're at least trying to compete, while many teams in the majors are tanking.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. We're also brought to you by Houseboats.com, your home for houseboat rentals on Shasta Lake. Coming up, we'll talk to our regular guest, Ray Woodson, about the Giants' 12-inning loss to the Rockies on Thursday. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. Now let's get to the conversation with Ray Woodson. Well, Ray, the Giants lose to the Rockies' first game against Colorado this season, and really it was a thriller that went 12 innings. And by the way, I wasn't ready for a runner to be placed at second base to start the 10th inning. I'm so glad they don't do that. I mean, it was real baseball. I could have watched that even longer. I know it was over 4 hours, that game, I think. But, you know, I mean, I know it's cold out and some fans are leaving, but hey, Clay Thompson stayed for the whole game, so why not? We don't need to have a runner at second base to start extra innings, right?
No, never, ever in any universe in the major leagues should that happen. And yeah, Clay was able to hang out, so the rest of us, I was watching the comfort of my own home. Clay, by the way, has gone through a metamorphosis, right? A's fan, Dodgers fan, and then wearing the Giants hat last night. And I understand it. It's about family. If my brother played for the Dodgers, I'd wear the Dodger hat, too. I'm sorry if people think that's blasphemy. Family is more important, but obviously, maybe Clay's a little salty because the A's let Trace go, and now he's back to hanging out with the Giants. I'm not sure what the deal is, but he was there last night. He hung out till the Seagulls were taking over the ballpark. And never, never should you have the runner at second base for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's not the game. You know, the game has undergone a lot of changes. That's ridiculous. If you want to do it at the lower levels in school and things like that, I get it. But in Major League Baseball, no way. And it doesn't happen. How many games go 12 innings plus? You know, a few, but not that many that it has an impact. So, you know, unfortunately for the Giants, didn't work out last night. The Rockies, first time they see him this year. And, you know, this is one of those teams that they're going to have to beat within the division because it looks like this division is going to be very close this year. I don't know, maybe everybody would be 500 in the last week of the year. That'd be fun.
That would be. I'll tell you where I give the Rockies the edge is their bullpen. I mean, they really upgraded by getting Brian Shaw and Wade Davis, and Adam Ottavino is just not a fun at bat at all. A lot of the Giants hitters struggle against him. So, I mean, I just really like their bullpen. Their pitching is definitely improved. I mean, it's kind of strange looking at the Rockies because their offense wasn't clicking the way it normally does. But they're up there near the top of the division because of their pitching.
Yeah, that's been the big part of it. We don't usually think of them that way, and that bullpen is very good. Ottavino, an uncomfortable at bat, especially for right-handed hitters, but you see a lot of those batting averages on the interstate, and that's kind of weird to see with the Rockies in May, in June, whenever. I tend to think they're going to come around. But like I said, these divisional games, these are especially important this year if nobody's running away with the division. And with all the injuries that have been going around, it's important to win these series. And the Giants have played a little bit better, but I think for them, given their current state, hang around 500 until the cavalry comes and then see what you could do.
Since we mentioned Clay Thompson, you know, I was glad that he was staying there until the end because he's a gamer, but I was also a little worried that his fingers might be frozen by the end of that game and he wouldn't be able to shoot in game three. I mean, it was cold and those seagulls are coming out. I was thinking, where is Randy Johnson when you need him? Remember when he killed that bird? But,
you know,
people would be sensitive to that, of course, especially the Twitter handle. You can actually tweet with a seagull. I didn't realize that until last night. They have a Twitter handle. I think it's like SF AT&T Seagull or something like that. And they'll tweet back to you.
I have tweeted with the seagull before. Yeah, and he's a pretty good follow, actually. So, these seagulls, they live on a diet of garlic fries at 11 o'clock. You know, it's just part of the tradition of AT&T Park. And all sorts of suggestions over the years, by the way, how to deal with the seagulls. I mean, they're just kind of part of the deal, right? But I think somebody suggested drones to scare them away. Because, you know what they do on the loudspeaker? They do, everybody clap your hands. And everybody claps their hands, and the birds fly away for a few seconds. And then they come back. I think they're on to that now. So maybe you have a bunch of drones chasing them out of the ballpark. What a scene that would be.
Well, one of the funniest answers I got this year from a Giants player was Austin Jackson. I said, yeah, what's it like playing out there in center field at AT&T Park? You know, you got the big triples alley. You got to cover a lot of ground. He goes, oh, you know, what have I learned? And what have you learned about it? And he said, to watch out for the seagulls. I mean, that was his answer. So,
Denard Span could have told him about that. Remember, Denard did not dig the seagulls at all. He probably got a warning from him about that, but you know, if you've played in the league a while and you've been around the majors and you've talked to players, you probably knew about that just watching the games on TV anyway. It is part of the atmosphere of the ballpark. That's just the way it is. And so the lesson here is don't go extra innings.
Exactly. Well, even the Seagulls weren't happy with the call on Brandon Crawford, and he gets ejected by, of all people, Chris Seagull, not Seagull, but Seagull. and he gets ejected. I mean, and that's the first thing is that you say, wait a minute, Brandon Crawford got ejected? Because that never happens. It was the second time, actually, in his career. And Bruce Bochy got ejected. And we could talk about the ramifications of that as far as players and all that. But, I mean, obviously, it just wasn't consistent as far as the strikes called there in that at-bat, and that strike three called, it was low, and then he gets ejected for not picking up his bat. We'll hear from him in a second, but I wanted to hear what you thought, Ray. I mean, that was kind of a crazy situation.
I've never seen that before. You know, it's not up to the player to pick up the bat, first of all. You know, Henry Schulman pointed out in his article, this is something that he's not supposed to do. He's not expected to do. And so it was part of the argument, and maybe the umpire, in the heat of the moment, thought it was disrespect, and in turn, he was disrespectful to Crawford. That's just the bottom line. That's just a ridiculous reason to eject a player. It was a bad call. Now, Crawford might have ended up getting ejected anyway, had he to argue, and you hardly ever see him argue. He's you know, such a flat-line player emotionally, at least, you know, his appearance is that way. He's not real demonstrative. He doesn't argue a lot with umps. And so when that happens, you know, it's pretty bad. We talk about this, you know, with a lot of different players in different sports. And the ones who don't, grouse at the officials, when they do get mad, for example, Klay Thompson, you know there's probably something wrong. So we saw it slow, but more than that, consistent. You mentioned it. That's all players ask for. Okay, if you're going to call that a strike and you don't call it a strike later, what am I supposed to do with that? I mean, the whole key to my success in the major leagues as a hitter is knowing the strike zone or having a pretty good idea of what pitches to go after, what I can't go after. And when the strike zone is an amoeba, that's when the players get really flustered and frustrated by it. So that was a bad move by Chris Seagull, I thought. And, you know, not just the bad call, and Bochy got run as well, and you saw that coming. But just the way he handled that situation, that's a bogus reason to throw a player out.
Well, let's hear from Brandon Crawford on Thursday night. Here's what he said after the game, after getting ejected.
The biggest thing is he called ball one down. And then Iannetta is talking to him, doesn't agree with it, and lets him know. And then a ball that's called, that's even lower than the one that you're calling down initially, you call a strike to end my at bat. And I just, that's That's the part that that's the biggest thing I have an issue with. If you call the if you call that first ball a strike, then I know I got to protect down there. But when you call it down and then you call another pitch lower that should have been ball four, a strike, that's what I had that problem with. It's all Belt's fault, really. I got thrown out of a Major League Baseball game for not picking up my bat. I've never heard of that before. That's a first for me. He told me to pick up my bat, and I was already on my way to the dugout. I've never heard of somebody getting tossed for not picking up a bat. I feel like we have somebody in the dugout that's literally their job to pick up the bat, so...
The only way that he gets tossed there, Ray, in my opinion, and it would make sense, would be if he left the bat there and the umpire, Chris Siegel, said, pick up your bat, and then he turned and swore at him or something like that, or, you know, or uh-huh. yelled at the umpire. If he didn't say anything, yeah, I mean, you got a bat boy that comes out and gets the bat. So I think it was an overreaction by Chris Siegel, for sure.
Yeah, in Twitter, they call it hashtag ump show, where the umpire is making it about him. And like I say, he's a moment in... And there are times when I think the umpires know they made a bad call. And so you're trying to save face and make it look like the player is being unreasonable. We've seen that. We've seen that in Major League Baseball numerous times. I don't know if that's exactly the case here. It could be. But human nature being what it is, it's in the realm of possibility, just trying to save face. But in the end, made it look worse. You know, the only other thing is if he slams the bat down, or uses the bat to draw a line to show where the strike zone should be, you know, stuff like that. I actually saw one of the teammates of my son in a Palomino League game got frustrated with the umpire, got called out on strikes, and he actually did that. He drew a line with his bat, and he got tossed out of the game. So that's reasonable. You're showing up the umpire there. Crawford wasn't showing up the umpire here, but maybe the umpire thought he was. There was miscommunication there. But, yeah, they got bat boys. That's what they do. So you could hear the frustration in Crawford's, you know, soundbite there. And I understand that, especially on the heels of Brandon Belt being called out on what was clearly ball four to end the game the other day.
Yeah, and we'll hear from him as well in a second. But it's funny what you say about drawing the line because, yeah, I mean, if you're going to get tossed, you got to get your money's worth in a way. I mean, there are times when you really deserve to get tossed. My favorite one I ever saw was in the minor leagues. Marty Barrett was our manager in Rancho Cucamonga, actually followed Tim Flannery the previous year. And Marty Barrett, you remember him, he played for the Red Sox in the World Series and everything.
Yep.
He got really upset, and he normally wouldn't go crazy, but he pretty much lost his mind, and he was covering home plate with dirt, and he looked like Richard Dreyfuss in that movie. What was that movie? Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
That's the Third Kind.
Yeah, when he's just obsessed with making mounds, you know? And he was doing that at home plate, like covering the plate with dirt, and he was out there for a good long time doing that. And yeah, I mean, sometimes, you know, managers just go ballistic. They lose their mind. You know, you get ejected, whatever it is. But leaving a bat at home plate, I mean, that just doesn't seem like a reason.
No, it isn't. And so, but, you know, we've seen this before. Umpires are human beings. They make mistakes. They act sometimes irrationally as human beings. That's what we do in the heat of the moment. And that, I think that's what happened there. I think the good umpires, what they will do is they'll go back and look, they'll tell the player later on, hey, I missed that. And that's when you get the player's respect. I've seen that in the NBA as well as in Major League Baseball. The good ones do that. So, unfortunately, it's not going to undo the damage here. And, by the way, could have contributed to a rally for the Giants in that last inning. So, by the way, just as an aside, Richard Dreyfuss, that was mounds of potatoes. mashed
That's
potatoes.
That's what it was. Okay.
He's building a mountain of mashed potatoes. Richard Dreyfuss, the cousin of a friend of mine in school growing up.
Oh, what a great actor.
And we first heard about him. We first heard about him in the mid-60s. He was starring in a play called You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown in L.A. And he got noticed from that and went on to have an incredible career. So there's your little Hollywood sideline.
What was my other favorite? Stakeout. Remember that? Him
yes.
and Emilio Estevez?
Those wow, are... that's a pull.
Those,
I, I, I remember the title of the movie. I never saw it.
All right, let's get back to, how about Brandon Belt just the other day? This was, you know, the day before Crawford gets tossed. Belt was upset because the game ended on a called strike three. I think this is the third time this has happened this year for him. And here's what he, here's what he said after the game about umpire Doug Eddings, and he might get fined for this.
It's tough because you hope that an umpire doesn't affect the game like that, but he did, and you're not sure if it was on purpose either. You know, we've heard that guy multiple times say that or insinuate that he's trying to get through the game fast, and then he makes calls like that I can't imagine that he really thought was a strike. You got to wonder.
Is he saying that like in joking and in passing, like he wants the game to be quick?
I don't know, but if you say it enough, you start to believe it. So, not sure if that's connected or not, but if you don't want it to be, then don't say it. Listen, you know, I'm not here to talk bad about the umpires. I think 99.9% of the umpires are great, and I actually enjoy talking to them. But there's just sometimes when you have a feeling that one or two of them are trying to get the game over with, whether it's through what they say or what they do. And that just can't happen. You can't have those guys affecting careers and affecting games like that. We had a really good hitter coming up after that who could have tied the game for us. And we never got that chance because he calls a ball that's so far off the plate, I don't even think I could have touched it if I swung at it. So
that is a startling accusation. You just don't hear that. I would expect him to get fined. And if that's true, I mean, if that really is true, then we really have a problem with Major League umpires. If guys are trying to get through the game quicker, especially at the end when you have a situation where if he gets on base, you know, you could have a tying run coming to the plate. I mean, that is just awful if that's true.
It's awful in any instance. It's awful when it's 10-0 in the top of the seventh inning and a batter comes out, regardless of the score, but it's a bigger impact, obviously, in the situation Belt was in, as he outlined. It was clearly outside the zone by several inches. It's, you know, this kind of stuff is, this technology lets us know even more than ever about that. It's going to add fuel to the people who want to see robot umpires or automatic strike zones. And, you know, I can't say that they're wrong when you see calls like that, especially if it's true that some of these umpires might be trying to influence the pace of the game because all this pressure for the pace of the game. The game is the game. The umpires can't worry about that. They can't worry about, you know, that sounds like something, by the way, a fan would say. Ah, he's got a flight to catch, you know, something like that.
Right.
And if that's really the case, if they're really in a hurry, they shouldn't be doing this, right? You shouldn't be getting cranky or in a hurry about it. You make the call that's there. And if that's what influenced the call, that is startling. I've not heard a player say that in a while. I have heard it, but not in a while. You don't hear it too often. And especially Blunt coming from Belt. And again, the frustration is evident there. Here's the deal about Belt. He does take some called third strikes, and he's had, what, three to end a game this year. And it's part of the back and forth I think he's got with umpires. There may be some umpires who are prone to hunting strikes with him because they feel like he's the guy, kind of guy who's going to try to, you know, work a walk. And there are probably those who punish him for that. They say, oh, yeah, he thinks he knows the strike zone. I'm going to ring him up on this one that's, you know, maybe out on the edge. There are times, not always, but there are times I wish Belt would swing at the close pitch, right, on a two-strike count and just foul it off, right? But his batting average on chasing pitches out of the zone is very poor. Ahmed Farid on NBC Sports Daily outlined this yesterday. I think he's got one hit in those situations this year. So that's not going to work. That's not who he is. And he does know the strike zone very well. He's shown the ability over the years to work a walk. He's having a great year this year. I think he's refined his knowledge of the strike zone. Most umpires, you know, agree with him, but sometimes they don't. And, you know, he's at this point in his career, I think, where he's 30 years old. He says, hey, you know, show me some respect. I do know the strike zone. That was, if you're a player, you look at a call like that, it's just disrespectful as well.
I'm glad you brought that up, though, because, I mean, to me, I have to take a little bit of the other side on this. You know, earlier in the count, I totally get it, and I think Brandon Belt has an incredible eye. But when you have two strikes, we're all taught this since Little League, that you've got to protect. And I actually think the blame falls on Belt and on Crawford. I mean, yeah, these calls weren't great, but when you have two strikes, if it's anywhere close, you have to try to foul the pitch off. You just have to, you know, fling your bat at the ball. You might strike out. You might not get a base hit. But that's why the pitcher has the advantage with two strikes. You've got to protect. And I'm getting a little tired of just, you know, some of the players doing that, blaming the umpire when we've all been taught that. I just think it's an old school rule. I mean, any hitter in Major League Baseball knows you've got to protect the play. You cannot leave it in the hands of the umpire, whether or not he makes a good or bad call.
Yeah, that's kind of a damning indictment of umpires, though, isn't it, when you say that? It's partly true, but I will say this. I mean, in both those situations, it served a real good purpose to get an extra base runner, you know, to extend the rally, get a tying or go-ahead run to the plate. And, you know, in the Belt instance especially, that pitch was way off the plate. I would not expect him to try to foul that one off. It was too far away. He said it. There's nothing he could have done with that pitch. And when you're calling those strikes, no hitter can do anything with that pitch. They're helpless. The one with Crawford was a little different, but as he pointed out, there was the inconsistency of that call during that very at-bat.
Right.
So that's what made that frustrating. But, you know, as a rule, yeah, if the pitch is very close, you want to foul it off and try to extend the at-bat. Belt did that this year. Okay, the 21 pitch at bat. So that's going to go down in legend.
Right.
So I think it shows his growth as a hitter that he kind of takes that to heart when he needs to. But he knows the strike zone. I kind of trust him on that. But it does lead to times where some umpires are going to hunt for strikes.
Well, we do have, you know, our good friend Eric Burns is pushing for mechanical umpires. We have Todd Frazier, I know, kind of came out strong about it, the Mets third baseman. You know, I hate to see a current player doing that. Just it's not a good look to me that he's complaining that much. You know, we want mechanical umps. I'm not in favor of it, Ray. I just still think there's a human element in baseball that's going to be missing if you have an umpire that's standing there. He's not calling balls and strikes. He's only going to call plays at the plate, I guess, basically, or foul balls. And I don't know. You're just going to miss something. Yeah, you're going to get every pitch correct, I guess. I mean, even computers make mistakes. But I don't know. It just sort of takes away. It would take a long time for me to get used to it. How about you?
Yeah, maybe. But I've said that about other changes in the game over the years. You'd still have the human element, by the way, because plate umpires would still be making other calls aside from balls and strikes. You'd still need them out there. But, you know, it's to the point where we have the technology, right? And I think it would aid the game. It would probably aid hitters. You know, I mean, if you had that defined strike zone, that consistency. But the bottom line is, I think that it continues to be worthy of exploration. You continue to look at it at the lower levels and see how it works out. I think it's something that's worth looking at. And it's still the game, right? You're talking about putting a runner at second base in the 12th inning. That's not the game. With an automatic strike zone, it's still three strikes, you're out. Ball four, it's a walk, right? So in that regard, I think it's still within the confines of the game. I know it would be a shock to a lot of people, but I'm one of those who is very open to changes in the game, including replay. I've supported it, but the mechanics of it are messed up right now. I still have a big problem with that. But I think the concept still is good. The execution is bad. So try it out. You know, if technology is there and it's relatively affordable, try it out at the lower levels, and then we'll move forward from there.
We'll continue our Giants conversation with Ray Woodson right after this. When it comes to Giants baseball, family memories are created one summer at a time. And the same can be said for your family vacation. How about an experience you will never forget? Shasta Lake is one of the most beautiful places to visit in California, and there is no better way to experience it than to rent a houseboat from houseboats.com. Jones Valley and Silverthorne Resorts are located on the Pitt River arm of Shasta Lake, unquestionably the very best area of Shasta Lake, and houseboats.com will set you up there with rentals ranging from the finest and largest houseboats available for rent in California to entry-level models for small groups or those new to houseboating. Houseboats.com has the best service, the best boats, and the best locations. Let's get that vacation planned. Call 877-468-7326 or go to houseboats.com today. Well, the replay technology did work on the Brandon Belt home run. It's fourth straight game, by the way, with a home run. Yep. He's on fire. But, yeah, that was one where I really like it. I actually do like the home run boundary calls on replay, because not just because it went the Giants' way, but, you know, that was clear. When you saw the replay, you could see it hit the railing. Would have drilled that guy right in a bad area, by the way, that fan, if it didn't have the, didn't have the railing there, as Dwayne Kuiper pointed out. But, no, I mean, that was a home run, and it wouldn't have been because the umpires didn't call it that way on the field.
Yeah, and there's a couple problems, too. You have a lot of ballparks where it's really hard for umpires. This is where I side with them, and where you see that you do need replay. Really hard for umpires to make that call, especially in night games where it's not really defined. In this case, you know, you have the way the ballpark is built, hard by the water. Yeah, you kind of had to do that, put the bleachers up high and that brick wall and the railing. But still, in a lot of ballparks, it's hard for an umpire to tell. There aren't defined, you know, well-defined boundaries. I remember, for example, Cleveland. I remember a few years ago the A's got robbed, and they went to replay. But I think they went to replay on like an old 1959 Admiral 13-inch TV set, and they couldn't really see. But you need high definition. You need HDTV on some of these calls to see exactly where the ball lands. You have also a lot of parks where the fan interface with the players and the field is very close. They're right on top of it. And sometimes they reach over and catch a ball. And that's going to continue to be a problem. I'm not saying put a moat between the fans and the field or anything like that and have every park the same, but you should make it easier to define the home run boundaries, I think, in a lot of these ballparks.
Admiral, what a television that was. They don't make those anymore.
One. No. We had one. That's why I remember that.
You just made me think this is going to date us, but you made me think about televisions before remotes. I used to have one in college where you had to change the channel by turning the knob, of course. And the first roommate I had in college, he broke it. I mean, he was changing the channel so much, he broke it, and we couldn't watch anything but one channel anymore. I mean, you know, that wouldn't happen today. It was just really sad.
No, you just get a new, what do they call the sticks, like Apple has now. You just get a new one. And you didn't have the money back in college to go to the TV repairman to get a new knob.
No.
Yeah, it was sad. I remember in college I had a TV and I could get four channels maybe. And if I wanted to watch, say, a football game, it better be on the right channel. These kids today, I tell you,
Couple more things before we finish up. Speaking of just wanting to watch one channel, I think Corey Guerin only wants to watch video of him facing right-handed batters, not the video of him facing lefties. And, you know, that's really not the norm. I looked up the numbers. In his career against left-handed batters, they're hitting .272. I mean, that's not great, but it's not terrible. So far this year, the lefties are 12 for 27. That's a .444 batting average. I don't know what's going on. I mean, that pitch wasn't terrible to Cargo when he had what turned out to be the game-winning hit. I mean, it was a little bit up, but it kind of jammed him. But the lefties do look comfortable right now against Guerin, so I don't know what he can do. That delivery seems to kind of play into lefties a little bit, you know, with that sidearm three-quarter delivery.
Yeah. And Bruce Bochy has to pay attention to those matchups and those numbers, you know, the longer we get into the season and more of a sample size that you have, right? But in an extra inning game, you know, when you're getting that late, he's got to run them out there against righties and lefties and hope for the best. I think, you know, in the end, you want another lefty in that bullpen if you can get it, but there's only so many guys you can put down there. So it's going to be up to Guerin and, you know, Kurt Young to work on his approach against left-handed batters. Yeah, that pitch was a little bit up, a little bit jammed him, but it wasn't the worst pitch I've seen. It's just one that Cargo could deposit into center field. And you had a hitter who's been struggling. And so that made it a little tougher to take. But we know the back of the baseball card with Cargo. He's probably going to come around. I still think the bullpen's pretty good, and it could actually get better here with Melanson coming back soon. If he is sound, we don't know that for sure. And you got Will Smith back. And Hunter Strickland's doing an okay job as a closer right now. More than okay. He was pretty filthy the other day against the Reds. So, you know, the bullpen is shaping up to be pretty good. You get the middle relievers out there in extra innings, this stuff happens.
By the way, I encourage our listeners to go back and click on the previous podcast where Corey Guerin is our guest and talks a little bit about what's going on with him. And Dave Greshner, the trainer, also on the previous podcast, and that's what I wanted to finish up with, Ray, is just how you've got all these players that have been injured and they're all on the mend. I mean, this is pretty exciting when you think about it. Yeah, Johnny Cueto, that's going to be a while. But the other guys, it seems more imminent because you've got now a plan for Madison Bumgarner to throw to hitters and then to go do some rehab starts. And, you know, Joe Panik is out there. They're working with him. They were just tossing some little weak ground balls to him, and he's swinging a bat. Mark Melanson now throwing to hitters, and Mac Williamson was one of those hitters. He's getting ready to go out on rehab. And even Hunter Pence is looking better in his rehab. And he went and saw Doug Latta, that hitting coach that worked with Justin Turner and Mac Williamson, and that seems to have made a difference. He's more relaxed up there, that different stance and everything. He's hitting the ball better. I saw him in Sacramento last weekend, and he hit a bullet down the right field line. You know, that was promising. So all of this stuff is real positive for the Giants.
Well, you hope so. You hope that they're all able to come back and make a contribution and that they hold it together until that point. It's going to get to a point in June that you better have these players back and making contributions. That's the hope for Bumgarner. Mac Williamson, you got to take your time on him. Hunter Pence, yeah, he could use being a little more comfortable to play. He's so fidgety up there to begin with. And listen, even now, with his diminished ability, you see it when he makes solid contact. He still hits the ball very hard. He's very strong. But I think at this point in his career, I think it's a why not. Let's try this approach. You've seen how it's worked with Mac. You've seen how it's worked with Justin Turner. Definitely try it out at the minor league level. And maybe he'll come back and bring a little more power into the lineup as well. We know he has the power. He's just not been able to make consistent contact. His contact has been weak, and that's been frustrating for him, for a player who's that powerful. So, like I said, hang around 500. Don't lose touch at the top of the division and get these guys back, especially the starting rotation. And I think that's the whole key, Joe. It's the starting rotation, because they haven't been able to go deep into games. It's going to tax the bullpen unless they get guys going deeper into games, like, Samardzija did. He was able to keep it together and get to the seventh inning. When you have pitchers going to the seventh instead of the fourth or fifth, it makes a huge difference, as you know. Number one, you're using your better relievers later in the game, and you're not taxing these guys. That has a cumulative effect over the season, as we know. So get that starting rotation back together again, and maybe then you've got a shot.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like Samardzija found something there after the second inning, so that really is promising as well. Ray, it's really a lot of fun right now. We've got both of these podcasts going. We got the Giants and, of course, the Warriors Dubs OT podcast, which everybody should check out, that we just did yesterday. Look forward to talking about both of these teams again next week.
Absolutely, Joe.
That's Ray Woodson. He joins us every week here on Inside China Basin and also on the Dubs OT Warriors podcast. Next week, we'll be talking about the Giants' road trip as they go to Houston, also to Wrigley Field in Chicago and face the Cubs, and then on to Colorado to take on the Rockies. The Giants are on the road the rest of the month of May after the Sunday game at home against the Rockies. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.